Welcome to Charles Dickens, A Brain on Fire, a series that digs deep into the life and works of one of the greatest novelists of all time. Hello everyone, Merry Christmas. Today's festive episode is with the brilliant actress, comedian and satirist Rosie Holt, whose hilarious lampooning of the cruel and stupid in public life makes her a true Dickensian. Rosie, hello, welcome.
Hello and welcome. No, I don't say welcome, do I? Thank you.
You can say welcome. I'm happy to be welcomed.
Welcome to my world.
Yes, this is great. Yeah. And it is Christmas Eve. We're not doing this in advance, are we? Christmas Eve, which is, of course, where the book starts. And today we're going to be talking all about A Christmas Carol because we're both actors. And you know, Rosie, that actors are very coherent and never waffle. You know, and you can really take what they say as the gospel when you're trying to sort of understand literature.
Oh, that is so true. I speak for all of us when I say we never waffle or just go off into little sentences that don't really go anywhere and don't seem to have any point.
Yeah. There's no throwaway here. And I think, although what might not be so known about you is you're a pretty avid reader. Now, I happen to know that in the first lockdown, you read The Count of Monte Cristo.
I did. Have you read it?
No, not yet.
Dom, you have to. It's amazing. The problem is I keep raving it to people so much, and I think because it's such an old, huge book, people look at me like I'm being eccentric, but it is amazing. It's so brilliant and unputdownable. I mean, it helped at the time there was nothing to do.
Yes, that's always going to be an advantage. But I like big old books. Do you want to just talk about that instead? I mean, I'm not prepared on that, but we could just shelve A Christmas Carol.
No, I also like Christmas Carol, and it takes much less time to read, which
it does.
Is also great.
Yes. So this is what you've done then. You've reread it this week.
Yes, because I think I was trying to remember the last time I read A Christmas Carol, and it's hard to, because of course I've read it before, but it's hard to pinpoint because there's so many adaptions and that I've seen over the years that... When I was rereading it, there were lots of bits where I was like, oh, I forgot about that bit because instead I was just remembering things that adaptions I'd seen or, you know, A Muppet's Christmas Carol or something like that.
Yeah, so
like
that. Were you surprised at the beginning there's only one Marley who's dead?
Marley and Marley.
Yeah, is there a misprint in this edition? What is going on? There's one Marley. Yeah, that's the first thing. Yeah.
Where's the singing?
Yeah, where is the singing? Yeah, there's one bit of singing, isn't there? Someone sings a bit of God Bless You, Merry Gentlemen, and then gets a ruler thrown in their face. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there you go. But as the book, as you well know, Rosie begins with the frontispiece, A Christmas Carol in prose. Therefore, probably no singing, but textually a kind of song, isn't it? And it's divided into staves.
Yeah. Oh, wait, sorry, there's an annoying phone call. So I'm going to pause.
Which reminds me, that's all right, that's all right. It reminds me of the moment when the bells ring in Scrooge's house.
Thank you. I did organise this phone call and for no one to pick it up as well, so that we could just
keep,
someone's picked it up now.
Excellent. Okay, good. Yeah,
good, good,
so
good.
Have you got your copy? How do you want to go about this?
Do you want to see my lovely copy? It's illustrated by Michael Forman, who's wonderful.
Oh, right, okay.
It's great. It has these beautiful illustrations in it. Because Michael Forman is a really... I recommend your listeners to check him out as an illustrator. So he illustrated Eric the Viking. Did you ever read that by Terry Jones?
No, but I saw the film.
Great. I didn't even know there was a film. And he's a great illustrator. But that's my copy.
Oh, well, that's a very special one. Okay, well, that's good. That's great. I've got this one, which has got a replica of the original with all these old, ye olde John Leech illustrations.
Nice.
Which is quite fun, but I think yours might be more, possibly a bit more fun.
Yours looks ye old and truer to the spirit of Dickens.
Yeah, and I suppose this is what this is all about. Okay, so how do we begin? We're obviously not going to read the entire book, but if we skimmed through it, and then we can just jump around and see what comes out, you know, because as we've established already, actors are very coherent, and this will be a coherent episode.
Oh, yeah.
We've established there's one Marley, we know this, and he's dead.
And he's dead. That's what I really like about how this book starts, is he goes on for about two pages telling us that Marley's dead. He's like, I don't want there to be any doubt that Marley is dead. I don't want people to think that he's been tricked. This is a ghost. You need to know this is a ghost for this whole story to work.
Yeah. Do you ever get the feeling at the start that he's warming into his theme, that he hasn't quite decided what's coming yet?
thought of that. He's like, this guy's dead. I'm working out the rest.
And yeah, that's great. And all the descriptions, all of that. How did you find all of that? Did anything jump out at you?
Yes. So I loved, well, really early on, just because that's where we are, I love there's a description of Scrooge, which is just brilliant. So it says he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone Scrooge, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, hard and sharp as flint. And then just goes on. It's just brilliant. And just every sentence is great.
Yes, and of course, this is the thing that people find irritating about Dickens if they don't want to go with it. But if you do go with it, it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And it's what makes Dickens Dickens. I mean, in adaptions, there's a reason why they're so characterful, because they have to be, because it's sort of honouring the text, because the text really, really goes into descriptions of the physical descriptions and just how the people come across and everything.
Do you have any favourite adaptations of this particular story?
It is The Muppets Christmas Carol. I actually think that's a really good adaptation, and it's actually quite faithful, apart from the Muppets and the singing. But it is. So I'll tell you which adaptation I didn't like very much. I know that's a negative thing to say, but did you watch the adaptation last year?
Which one? The
Sarah Phelps, who's a great writer. It was her adaptation, and it was starring Guy Pearce.
Yes, I did.
I didn't like it very much.
I sort of did, because it went somewhere else. But then someone told me that they thought that Guy Pearce's voice for Scrooge was a bit like Chris Packham. And after I heard that, I sort of couldn't unhear it. And I love Guy Pearce. And of course, that brings us back to The Count of Monte Cristo. So we're back to the main book that we're here to talk about.
That film, Dom. Do you read the book?
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I wasn't keen on that adaptation. I found it very watchable, but I didn't really like the liberties it took with the story, where of course, Muppet's Christmas Carol. What I like about that is, yes, it takes it in a crazy eye direction, but it's still pretty faithful to the whole spirit and actually the story. And I didn't really like I didn't like that they sort of hashtag me too'd up Scrooge and Bob Cratchit's wife in the Guy Pearce version. I wasn't terribly happy with that.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And doesn't it start with Jacob Marley in his grave being urinated on?
Yes.
And he gets woken up. Yeah. I mean, I can see what they're trying to do. It's a bit edgy.
It just sort of took the joy out of it. Like, the thing about Christmas Carol is there's so much joy in it. And it's not that it's not dark either. I mean, all of Dickens' work is very dark in places. And this isn't any exception. But there is so much joy to the whole story and the whole journey of Scrooge. And I felt that was really missing from last year's adaptation.
You're completely right. Yeah, if you don't have the light and the dark, you've only got half of Dickens. And some adaptations only have the light and some only have the dark. And I think that one.
Yeah.
And it did. I think it's probably fair to say it messed with it. What I did like, having sort of had this story in my life for so long, it was quite nice to have it sort of messed with and genuinely not knowing what the hell they were going to do next. But again, I did see on Twitter at the time, I think Andy Serkis is playing the spirit figure, isn't he? And it's only that one kind of spirit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's always a really fun thing, where there's a difference. Every adaptation you watch, you go, oh, what are they going to do with this spirit? How are they going to dress him up?
Yeah, I can see that. And somebody also, I remember somebody also saying that when you see Andy Serkis in his kind of underground sort of basement club with all this kind of red fire and everything, it looked a bit like those old video piracy is a crime videos that you used.
Oh, God, that's so true.
Yeah. So quite away from Dickens then.
But also, sorry, I'm just going to throw another adaptation.
No, this is fine. This is what this podcast is now about. Let's go for it.
So, for example, Scrooged, I've got a lot of fondness for Scrooged. Yes, it does something completely different, but again, it's got the same sort of joyous kind of feeling of Scrooge, and admittedly very sort of 90s Bill Murray.
Yes, and of course, and on the back of Scrooge, you really get Groundhog Day as well, don't you? Because that's kind of unofficially a bit of a Christmas Carol film, isn't it? Because
you're right, I hadn't thought of that.
To break that curse, he's under that spell, he has to change. He has to sort of figure it out. So you get two Christmas Carol adaptations, really, with Bill Murray, which is excellent.
Yeah.
Scrooge is fantastic. And you get the cab driver, haven't you, as the Ghost of Christmas Past?
Yeah, he's great. And what's that wonderful Carol Kane as the Ghost of Christmas Present?
Oh, yeah, and she decks him, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Not with Bells of Holly, but just beats him up.
Yeah, she does. She's really violent. I remember when I was a kid, I was always quite... I hated that bit of the film because I found it really... Because she was so violent.
Yes, yeah, it is. And actually, the ghost that represents Jacob Marley as well, his old boss, is it, comes in and is
Bill Murray shoots him and then he's drinking whiskey and all the whiskey just comes out of the holes. It's coming back to me now.
But in terms of the original...
back to the original.
I've got a question for you. When do you think, and by the way, Dickens listeners, this is really for you, okay? This is going to impress you, this question. When do you think the haunting actually starts for Scrooge in the book?
Oh, interesting. I mean, isn't it, I mean, I'd say surely when he comes to the doorknob and the Marley becomes a face in the doorknob. Is something happened before then I missed?
We see, I sort of think, because there's all that stuff about the fog and it not being light all day and him being in his office and looking out and the houses opposite being mere phantoms. And I know that's a bit literal to sort of take that. But there's this kind of disturbance outside Scrooge's office in the court with people running up and down and lighting candles and everything. So it sort of seems like this kind of mist is kind of closing in. And you're right, then he goes to his house and he sees Marley's face as the door knocker. But even the yard that Scrooge is familiar with is really dark in a way that it seems like it isn't usually. And he's having to sort of find his way to the door with his hand.
Oh, that's so interesting. I hadn't thought about that. You're right. I guess I saw it because it's just, Dickens is so good at building up atmosphere. I almost took it as it was just sort of inevitably leading you to the haunting. But you're right that actually you could easily interpret that as actually being part of the haunting itself.
I just wondered. I mean, that's maybe me overreading it. Recently, I've had that kind of feeling about it, thinking that maybe it's already kind of started for him.
No, I like that. I like that interpretation, Dom.
You go with that. Do I get a good mark in my essay for that one? Okay, all right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And how about the portly gentleman that comes in?
To see Scrooge and asks for...
The portly gentleman, yeah. I mean, I like the beginning because the beginning is just a litany of him being awful to people, isn't it? So it just sort of first his nephew and, or is it the nephew and then the portly gentleman?
It is, yeah, you're right. It's his nephew first. And you see, and I love Fred, the nephew, but you do wonder sometimes, if you're going to be cynical, is he possessed of all the facts for him to believe that everything's brilliant all the time? And is Scrooge actually the one that really knows and is clever?
No. When he's having, in the present, when Fred's with all his friends and they're all joking around, they're all going, oh, Fred. And they all laughed at him, and he knew they were laughing at him, but he let them laugh, and he laughed too. Some kind of passage along those lines.
There's something entertaining about Scrooge when he's bad, isn't there? I think, you know, in ways that he's fun in a way that he can't be when he's good at the end, I think, possibly.
Yeah, that's always the problem with any of these characters who go on redemptive arcs, that they're always more entertaining to begin with. But also, I think the people who populate this novel are so sort of good. There's just, Tiny Tim and Bob Cratchit and Fred, there's all these characters who are just so lovely and they're like, don't worry, Mr. Scrooge. We'll come along next year. And it's all sort of, so Scrooge seems even more unreasonable because he's just, his world is populated by well-meaning people who just are really excited by Christmas.
Yes, and he's having none of it. Something I picked up and I didn't know about was looking up what 15 shillings was, which is what Scrooge pays Bob a week. And it's basically, in today's money, Bob is on £50 a week.
That's not going to feed a large family, is it?
No, it's not. And then suddenly I'm less impressed with Scrooge now. I'm sort of not liking him as much.
He's not a great guy, this Scrooge.
So, do you believe in ghosts?
Yes, actually, I do.
Oh, I always worry when people say that because I sort of want them to dismiss it. I don't like the idea of ghosts. But what happened?
My grandfather used to see ghosts, and he was a very stiff upper lip sort of man. And he was very embarrassed about the fact that he saw ghosts. And it only happened sort of a few times in his life when he saw it. But I don't know. So I was always quite convinced by that because he was someone very unlikely to be swayed by that or believe that. And I like the idea of that there are... that a ghost is a sort of like a recording of something that's happened and it's sort of caught in the atmosphere. I feel like an idiot saying this, but I do. I mean, I don't. You know, if someone said no, Rosie, actually, I can prove to you there's no such thing as ghosts. I'd be like, okay, you win. But I do, yeah, I do think there's such thing as ghosts, actually. Yeah.
Well, I know, but it's hard, isn't it? It's hard if someone says, I can prove it to you empirically, there is no ghost. And then you go, but yeah, but what's that? What's the, you know, I've just seen this and you can't explain it. And there are ideas, aren't there, about haunted houses replaying scenes and things from the past, I think, as you were.
I don't think there are ghosts like A Christmas Carol, though.
You don't think they come in with chains around them and pigtails or...
No.
Okay, so what about the ghosts in this book then? Talk me through them. What do you think? What do you think of Jacob Marley? Thoughts on Jacob Marley?
Jacob Marley's brilliant. And I like how every now and again he breaks the conversation just to wail. Doesn't he? Just rattles his chains and wails.
Yeah. He's not in a good place, is he?
No.
I find him interesting in that he says about the three spirits that are going to haunt Scrooge. And he says, of my own procuring, Ebenezer. So the idea that he's fixed it for Scrooge to have these spirits visit him. Yeah. And what's in it for old Jacob?
Well, I guess Scrooge was his only friend. But also, they're really alike, aren't they? Because Scrooge says at the beginning, Brother Dickens writes at the beginning, that sometimes people called Scrooge Marley and he didn't much care. He was like, well, it's all much of a muchness to me. And yes, that's to do with, because for Scrooge, the main goal is money. But it also says something about how they both were. You get the sense that they were both very similar.
Yeah.
I think he probably looks at Scrooge as somebody who's basically him, but still got a chance.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. It reminds me that later on in the book, if you remember, there's that description of Scrooge being by himself, when his fiance, that who he loses, when she's with her next partner, he sees Scrooge on the day that Jacob Marley has died through the windows of his office by a candle, looking alone, completely alone in the world. So yes, all Scrooge's kind of obsession with business and everything left him with just one person in his life, which was old Jacob Marley. I'm just interested in that he's, because obviously Jacob Marley is in some sort of purgatory, isn't he? And he's suffering.
Yeah.
So what does he get from, does he get?
Well, doesn't he talk about how, I just read this, but I can't remember. Doesn't he talk about wanting to sort of help the people far below at one point? So he's kind of, and he's filled with remorse. What I like is there's a bit where Scrooge quibbles with him about, because he goes, oh, I've been here for 7 years, sort of. And he goes, oh, you haven't got very far, or something like that.
And then he wails again.
Yeah, and he's like, whoa!
You're completely right, though, also. Yes, so when, after he's had a little wail again, old Jacob says something about the regret of not to know that no space of regret can make amends for life's opportunities misused. And things like that. Yeah. And when he flies out the window at the end of that first stave, and Scrooge sees it, you see those ghosts in the chains. Some of them... guilty governments linked together, which I like. I like to think of what's waiting for some people. The misery with all those spirits in the air with the chains is that they want to interfere for good, but they don't have the power anymore. They can't. They see people suffering and they can't, which is a deeply profound thing. So, of course, that answers my question then. Of course, Jacob, if he can help anyone, he's going to try and do it. Wow. Well done. I think we should celebrate that moment. I think that's, it pulled that one out of the hat.
Yeah. Look at us, two actors putting Dickens to rights.
Great. So that's old Jacob Marley then. And then our first one is The Ghost of Christmas Past. Did anything about...
Is it an old baby? I'm always really confused by that description.
It's just amazing, the sort of the visual element of it.
Yeah.
I can't quite... So the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctness, being now a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now a pair of legs without a head.
So it's like a Picasso painting.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a bit cutting, I think, as a character as well. He sort of pushes old Scrooge around a bit.
Well, actually, also what I'd forgotten was that Scrooge instantly starts getting affected, like from the word go, when he's brought back to his past, and even when he's sort of on his way to the school and he's looking at his schoolmates playing, and he starts to get very sort of emotional from the get-go. So from the get-go you go, oh, this is working. You know how in some adaptions it's more like he's more aloof until later on.
Yeah, I think that's completely understandable, isn't it? I think because you're having to hold back that and keep it as a kind of surprise, whereas in a novel you can kind of get away with the fluctuation of him softening and then hardening again. So when the ghost of Christmas past says, "What's the matter?" and he goes, "Nothing." How about, does that make you, that moment though, that's an interesting moment when he goes back and suddenly you're out in the open country and it's the school and the fields and the snow. Does that stir anything for you? Does it remind you of anything in the past or schools or Christmas holiday feelings?
I don't know. I mean, as you know, I went to a school in Bath, around the rolling countryside. But I guess what I like about it is, of course, is Scrooge is clearly someone who has closed himself off from his past. And yeah. I think what's so effective about this whole passage is it's someone who hasn't even thought about it for so long. He's just packed it away. So the idea of going, this is what you were like as a child, this is where you went, really affects him. Because and I think we can all sort of relate to that. Like reading that, it does sort of make you think back, really, the time when we were all more innocent.
Yeah, and riding on carriages. We all did that.
Yeah, we all did that. Oh, yeah. And yeah. Pictured Alibaba at the window.
Yeah, which reminds me, I've not read that. I've not read the Arabian Nights. It is from that, isn't it?
I have read them, but there's so many of them, Dom. You find a book of the Arabian Nights, it's only got a load. It's only got, because there's like 1,001, isn't there?
Yeah, you just reminded me of the title. Exactly, there's 1,001. So there's quite a lot of catching up to do. And there's also Robinson Crusoe references again, which I cannot comment on because I've not, even though it's a really famous book, I haven't read it either. but this is great because that just reinforces for me how qualified we are to be having this discussion. So that's great. Oh, what was that thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah, about Scrooge then. Why do you think Scrooge has become miserly?
I mean, what's clear is that he's not had, it's not like they go, look, Scrooge had this wonderful, happy childhood. He didn't. His dad is clearly a bit of a plonker, and so is his teacher. And so you get little, you know, you get sort of little clues that it's not happy. And yeah, there's moments of light, like he loves his sister and his first boss is lovely. But even with his boss, he's sort of a bit like, oh, that's sweet. But he clearly from the offset has this sort of thing about money and ambition that's quite cold. I mean, that's why his lover tells him to do one.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. In your modern adaptation, that's exactly what she says to him. I think, but it reminds me, in that scene, she says to him, you fear the world too much, basically. It's through fear that he goes the way he does. A bit like in Star Wars, you know, the whole fear leads to hate thing.
Oh my God, did you think that's based on A Christmas Carol?
I think everything is based on A Christmas Carol, as we were proving time and time again in this chat. No, it is, isn't it? It's fear. It's fear that drives him. It's fear of poverty. It's fear. And these are obviously very real fears, especially in the 1840s, like in any time. Yeah. And it's kind of that pragmatism is what drives him. And he loses everything in that kind of obsession to try and make sure he's kind of all right, perhaps.
Yeah. And he doesn't even do much with his money. I mean, that's another sad thing. He just misers it away. He just sits on it.
Yeah.
Which again, yes, sort of speaks of a kind of fear, isn't it? Because it's not like he's enjoying what he has. He's just saving for a rainy day? No.
I think that's the thing I'm sort of trying to get at almost, is that Scrooge is very human and that we all can be a bit Scrooge-like in our lives, can't we? I mean, it takes courage to be generous to people sometimes. So it's so easy. That bit in the beginning of the book where they're talking about no one ever stopped him in the street because he's going down the street. No one's going to talk to him. No one's even going to ask him what time it is.
Even the blind man's dogs.
Yeah, I find that a little bit tacky, that little bit about the dog speaks, doesn't it? It says something like, no eye is better than an evil eye, dark master, which I think can be consigned to the 1840s. I don't think we need to. I think in later editions we can excise that. I'm sorry. I just don't like it.
The dog didn't speak in my version.
I've got it.
Yeah, even the blind man's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming on, would tug their owners into doorways. And no, you're right, they do say, and would wag their tails as though they said, no eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master. Yeah, you're right, that's silly. I'd skimmed over that a little bit, and now I see why. My brain was protecting me.
Oh, good, 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 good. So anyway, so Scrooge is, he's got the Ghost of Christmas Past. He's seen his past. He's seen all the mistakes he's made. But he goes to Fezziwig, doesn't he? Also, I like Fezziwig. Fezziwig's great. Thank God for Fezziwig in this chapter.
Yeah, Fezziwig's a lot of fun. And it's got that great description where all the people come into the party and they all come in different ways. And it's just a sort of, it's just a sort of joyous little chapter. Which is funny because also it's another thing that we always remember from adaptions. But actually it's not that long and nothing really happens in it. It's just very, really builds the atmosphere of you straight away get what Fezziwig is like and what he was like as a boss and how sociable he was and all that. And that's kind of all you need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Something else that's a running theme, which you may have noticed, I think, is that people having crushes on each other, including Dickens having a crush on just about every young woman he's written about in this book.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, no, it's so true.
Yeah, and so he really likes Fezziwig's daughters that come in.
Yeah, they've all got suitors. They trail along after them.
Yeah, with broken hearts, yes. So Rosie, how about stave three then? You want to take us through stave three, Ghost of Christmas Present?
Ghost of Christmas Present. He's the fun jolly one.
He's the Father Christmas, isn't he?
He is Father. He's Father Ginger. Father Christmas. Is he Ginger? Have I just made that up?
No, I mean there's no reason why not. Why he shouldn't be Ginger?
I think it's because he's Ginger in this book and also in the illustrations, and he's also Ginger in A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Yeah, he's a lovely Father Christmassy character, and he's decorate. What I think's nice is Scrooge comes in his room and it's all Christmassy. He's got all sorts of things there. He's very much going, this is what I'm all about, Scrooge. He only lives for a night. He only lives for a night, Dom.
I know. And then one of his brothers takes over in 1844. It's what happens. Because Scrooge asks him, have you many brothers or sisters, Spirit? And he says, more than 1,800. Because it's 1843, and that's my year. Yes, so he does. He turns old and grey at the stroke of the clock. Although it's kind of more than a night, isn't it? In this kind of weird, kind of spirity time. But yeah, it is quite sad. But what I love about him is the description of him, you know, clothed in a simple deep green robe bordered with white fur. So he's kind of a bit Father Christmas before the Coca-Cola Corporation.
Father Christmas, yeah.
Yeah. Before he's made red.
Wasn't Father Christmas only made red by Pepsi? That was a rumour I heard recently.
Oh, is it? No, I think, isn't it Coca-Cola?
Yeah, Coca-Cola. Before that, he was green. And then it was only Coca-Cola that made him red.
Yeah, but do you know what? I'm sort of glad they made him red because he has to be red, doesn't he? Isn't red
much
right?
Much more Christmassy colour. But that means that Coke won.
I know. What can I say? What can I say? Except that it just looks right, doesn't it? There we go. So the Ghost of Christmas Present, and he's surrounded by all this food. And there's this really nice bit. I like this kind of subtle bit, which you can't get in any adaptation, I don't think, about. And I'm going to paraphrase because I can't find it. There's something about Scrooge entering into the room where the ghost is sat and saying there's a line about the spirit's eyes being kind, but Scrooge not wanting to meet them.
Yes.
I find that very affecting somehow. You're kind of overawed by that generosity, that something in you can't kind of join in. You can't quite be part of the party kind of thing. So the third stave is brilliant for all the descriptions of the snow and the shops and the houses and the shopping and all of that. What do you think? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, it's great. It's really bustling. And what I like about this is, well, this book is that everybody but Scrooge are just really excited about Christmas. And they're all going around being excited about Christmas and they're going here and that. No one else doesn't like Christmas. And it's a very sort of magical town that even amongst all this poverty, everyone is excited by Christmas. And this section really brings that to life.
Yeah. And all this stuff about the grocers and this kind of, I mean, it's kind of a celebration in a way, isn't it? Of sort of capitalism in a kind of shiny, fun sort of way. It's like, look at all this stuff. Buy it. And everyone's, and the descriptions of people jostling each other and getting a bit cross in the queues. I mean, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So that's all good. Yeah.
And then we go to the Cratchits. What do you think about the Cratchits, Rosie? Do you find them kind of unbearable?
No, the Cratchits are great. They're a very idyllic, loving family who, even though they've only got a little goose, are still, you know, filled with Christmas spirit. They're a bit cheesy. Yes. I wouldn't want to hang out with them, to be honest. I mean, they're very nice, but would you want to hang out with the Cratchits? Would you want to have a pint with the Cratchits?
I think I'd rather go to Fred's house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awful, isn't it? That's not the message of this book I've taken the wrong lesson from it.
The message is Fred is fun and the Cratchits are sweet but boring. Bit boring.
I think it's partly the adaptations again, because I think, you know, the things like the description of Tiny Tim, you know, you see animations of it or films and things, and he's got this little crutch that he leans on. But actually in the book, his limbs are supported by these iron frames as well.
Yeah. And he's got a little withered hand.
Yeah. So actually it's kind of a bit darker, but I think that the hardest part to deal with about the Cratchits is they're so upbeat and optimistic all the time.
Yeah. All the time.
Which is kind of slightly heartbreaking, actually, because if they were a bit down, you'd be kind of, it's what you would expect. But the fact that they just take what tiny thing they have and make it into something sort of amazing.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing.
That's why it affects Scrooge, isn't it? Because he looks at them and he's like, oh, this is rubbish. And yet they're all really pleased.
Yes. So what about the flying in this, Dave? Do you like the flying over the sea? Because I think that's missing from just about every version.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. I really liked that. I mean, I also found it funny, though, because it's also, as I said to you earlier, it's a bit of a way of going, even the folk at sea are happy about Christmas. They're excited about Christmas. So it's sort of a weird, strange detour. You can see why adaptions always get rid of it, because it's not really needed. But there is something quite magical about it. It reminds me of the snowman.
Oh, completely. Yeah, it's all in this book, isn't it? That's what I think. I mean, it's exactly right. It reminds me of that too. And lighting on the ship, and you're completely right. Everyone, whatever they're dealing with, they're all still wishing each other a Merry Christmas. It's kind of like a statement of intent, isn't it? Rather than what it actually would be.
Yeah, completely.
Do you find it sentimental, though? Do you find it a bit unbearable?
No. Maybe it's just because it's such a classic story. But I find it really easy to go with it. Do you know what I mean? I think it's such a classic story.
Yeah, I think sort of reading around it a bit as well, you know, the Scrooge's young sister who comes in earlier, little Fan,
yeah,
and, you know, and she dies later on. And I think they say that she's based on Dickens's own older sister, Frances. She dies a few years after this book is written. Dickens's nephew is the child that Dickens's own nephew also dies. So the real, what I'm trying to say is the real life Tiny Tim actually dies.
Oh, no.
So when you sort of have that kind of in mind, you can sort of see that kind of drive and that kind of need to sort of put things out there in a really positive way to say, no, things can change. We can fix this.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's such a beautiful wish fulfillment that the idea that if you can halt death, because that's what he does. He halts it for himself and Tiny Tim. But by being a better person, which is a sort of it's a very Christian idea, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that is interesting, because it is a sort of Christian story in a sense. It's written quite lightly, isn't it? It's not everything is about Jesus or anything like that, but it is clearly a Christian sort of story. Do you think that sits comfortably today for people?
Well, I think because, as you say, it does wear it lightly. I mean, it doesn't, it, you know, it doesn't read as a Christian book or a faith book. I think it does translate, because also everyone likes the idea of that you can change and you can learn from past mistakes, and that you can, you know, you can change the course of your life. I mean, it's funny, because when we were texting about this and you mentioned It's a Wonderful Life, and of course that's very much inspired by A Christmas Carol. I love that film. I watch that film every year.
Oh, it's amazing. I sort of slightly try and ration it. I sometimes deprive myself one Christmas so that I can watch it the following Christmas, having just had a bit more.
Do you? My brother said, because me and my mum said, well, when are we going to watch it? And Charlie went, you watch that film too much. And I said, why don't we watch it once a year? That's fine.
Who is this, Charlie? Yeah, come
he's
on.
My brother. Once a year is allowed,
isn't it?
Your brother.
He knows nothing.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, no, but it is. It's still very Dickensian in the moment where old Jimmy Stewart's on the bridge and he's sort of saying he's at the end of his rope and he's going to jump before the angel or spirit comes and talks to him. That's kind of quite Dickensian, because Dickens's next Christmas story, The Chimes, it's actually very much about characters being driven to suicide through kind of desperation. So it's kind of, it's still, it's even more, I mean, you think of A Christmas Carol with It's a Wonderful Life, but it actually, it sort of comes from other Christmas books of his as well. So there we go. There we go. So we've got the ghost, and as you said, the ghost of Christmas Present, he dies, he fades, he's gone. He's gone on the strike of 12.
Very short lifespan.
So if he did have ginger hair at the start, it's all grey now.
It's all white. It's white by the end. Was he ever a Christmas baby? That's what I want to know. Did he just, if his life started at that night, did it start with him as a full-grown bearded man, or did he come out with a little, you know, as a little ginger baby? How does it work? Don't know. Maybe someone's to make an adaptation of that. I don't know. I'm just putting that out there.
No, you're onto something there. It's certainly a thought I've never had. It would be odd that he arrives fully formed and fully sort of lucid and able to sort of take charge of the situation and know how to fly.
Yeah.
So moving on, with sort of time is racing on. We're into then the final spirit then, the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
Great. He's the one you remember though, isn't he? When you first read it, it makes such a sort of visceral impression. And in every adaptation, you always remember the ghost of Christmas yet to come. It's such a great, because he's basically death, isn't he? I mean, that's how he's dressed.
Yeah,
he's like the Grim Reaper, isn't he?
And he doesn't speak. Well, Scrooge hears his voice in his head. The best ghost ever.
Quite right. And also in The Muppets, if you've been watching The Muppets and you've been feeling a bit, you know, cross, thinking, well, this isn't how it's supposed to be. When they get to that bit, that spirit is very, very scary and very, very true to the book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why doesn't it speak?
I don't know. I think, I don't know. Just doesn't speak.
Thank you for solving that. I'm really pleased to know that. Thank you.
She just doesn't want to speak. She just doesn't need to. It's not his thing.
He can do lots of pointing and inclining of his head.
But I don't know. I guess it just feels a lot more effective. I mean, what I like about it is it's such, even though it's in the future and it shouldn't be that different from the other two in terms of what's going, you know, the general feeling of it, it's a very different world, isn't it? So, you know, it's the first bit is just people and Dickens has these wonderful descriptions of these people who are quite physically ugly, not needed. Just sort of bitching and griping about Scrooge and what they can gather from his stuff. So it's very different from the Ghost of Christmas Present, where everyone was sort of jostling around and getting things. And this one, you feel like you're really in the underbelly of Christmas, that you've just got all these characters who are just trying to work out what they can gain from Scrooge's death. It's immediately a very different atmosphere. It's like the whole of the future is tainted. It's not just what happens to Scrooge. It's the whole world is different.
And I suppose in this fourth stave, there's very much a sense of foreboding, like things might not actually work out for Scrooge now that he's gone too far down into hell, into Hades, wherever, to get out of it again. And I do find genuinely very, very well written all of the Cratchit stuff again, with Tiny Tim now gone. And that moment where Bob goes upstairs, he leaves the family downstairs and he goes upstairs and Tim's there lying on the bed and everything. And he sort of says goodbye and comes back down. I mean, it's very, very hard, very real, actually. I think that's the thing. I think it's, I think Dickens is often not thought of as someone that does psychological depth or truth, but I think he does. I think it's all there.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah.
So there we go. So we get to the tomb. We get to the tomb, and he brushes it away. And Scrooge, for some reason, hasn't worked out that it's him yet.
I know. You're like, come on.
He's trying to sort of...
It's obviously you.
But it is one of those situations where you're kind of just in denial, perhaps. And you just kind of think, because he refuses. He's taken to a room at one point, isn't he? And there's a figure under a bedsheet.
Yeah, and he won't look at it. He says, I can't.
He hasn't the power. He won't pull it back and look at it. All right, I'll do another version. Here's a tombstone.
Really going to hammer it home.
Do you remember, you must have done this at school in creative writing or whatever, where you had to write stories and you've got yourself into a little part in the plot and you go, and it was all a dream.
Oh, God, so, I used to do that all the time. I used to do that with all of my stories, because I'd be very interested in the beginning and the setup, and then I'd have no idea where to take it. So it would always end up with, then she woke up.
Yeah, which I did too, and until the teacher eventually said, that's not how every story goes. It's not that easy, actually. You have to do a bit more work. But this is sort of what happens then for stave five, the final stave, Scrooge wakes up.
Yeah, but it's so joyous, isn't it? You can't not read that and be cheered, because it's such a lovely idea of someone waking up and just being so happy to be alive and be present and be in his own bed sheets. And then he sort of gets up and he goes, oh, I've still got my curtains, because of course in the future they'd taken away his curtains. And it's just, you kind of forgive it all that, because it's just such a wonderful, it's just a really, I can't think of any words. So really happy making bit.
Yeah, it's a nice ending. I think, yeah, but you're completely right. Yeah, I think we've, by that point, we want that, don't we? I just think what I'm trying to work out is, how does Dickens get away with it? How does he get away with the trick of, oh, he wakes up? I suppose actually because he falls asleep in the first place.
And also that he's kind of set up and that he's gone, these spirits are going to visit you over the... Though it's very confusing, isn't it? Because it says these spirits are going to visit you over the course of three nights, and then they all come in one night. I got really confused by that.
Maybe because it's a Christmas night in the past, a Christmas night in the present, and then one in the future, and then you're taken back. I don't know. It's very hard to know that, isn't it? But it's obviously a dream. It's a dream. It's a very visceral one, a very real one. He is really there in body and spirit and everything when he's travelling. That moment when the ghost of Christmas past sort of makes him go out the window and he's scared, saying, I'm going to fall. Could we stop now? Kind of thing. And then so Scrooge has still got things to do, though. He sees the portly gentleman again walking towards him and all of that.
And he whispers in his ear. We don't know how much he gives to him, but we know it's good. It's the portly gentleman. Yeah. And then I like that he sort of says to the portly gentleman, as long as you come and visit me. I think Scrooge is thinking, I've got to make some friends quickly.
And I love the bit where he goes to Fred's house and he's kind of... You know, he's unsure about knocking on the door.
Yeah, it's lovely.
The trick he plays on Bob, though, coming in late, that's a bit mean, isn't it?
Well, it's also funny because it's not... In every adaption, they don't do that, do they? In every adaption I know, he goes over to Bob's house. And in this one, he sends over a turkey to Bob's house, sort of thinking, ha, 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 he won't know where it's come from. And then it's only the next day where he's like, surprise, I'm actually nice. And I thought, I could see why every adaption changes it and goes, no, we want this all on one day. We want that whole thing of him coming around and delivering the turkey.
Yes. And then and Scrooge promises to raise Bob's salary and all of that. And they're going to discuss his affairs over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop.
What is smoking?
Have you ever had smoking bishop?
No, what is a smoking bishop?
Ah, maybe some sort of punch, perhaps. I'm going to cut this bit out. I don't want to admit to not knowing this. It just sounds a bit wrong, though, doesn't it? It doesn't sound like something you want to drink. It sort of...
Smoking, but yeah, it sounds... I mean, what the hell is that?
But anyway, that brings us to the end, and we know that Scrooge is a good guy, and he becomes a second father to Tiny Tim.
And he doesn't die.
Who doesn't die, exactly. Brilliant. So having reread it again, what has this left you with? What do you think? Is it a story for all time?
Yes. I think it's great. It is great. There's a reason why it never gets old, that people are always drawn back to it. Because it's brilliant and it's timeless. I think that's what I say about it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Not at all. And thank you for doing the homework and rereading it for me this week.
No, I so enjoyed it. It was great. It was great to reread it. It was really nice having an excuse to.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Rosie. Have an amazing Christmas, and I hope when things are moving again properly, we can
see each other again in the new year.
Yes, so do I. Thanks, Tom.
Bye now. Thank you for listening to Charles Dickens, A Brain on Fire. Before I go, I just want to let you know that there's a very special A Christmas Carol film available on demand this Christmas. It's all shot inside Dickens' London home. So if you're interested to see it, please go to dickensmuseum.com. See you next year.